Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Monday, May 11th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Amelia Newcomb.
And I'm Dave Scott.
You can't help but be inspired by the many ways people express their determination to sustain their fellow beings in trying times. Some offer succor with food, like Sikh members of the Guru Nanak Darbar Gurdwara in the UK, who make 850-plus meals daily for National Health Service workers. Others deploy color. Friends who recently took ownership of a tulip farm in their Washington hometown were undaunted as the pandemic upended local Mother's Day sales and a tulip festival. They brought the beauty to their fans instead, shipping blossoms and live-streaming the vibrant tulip fields at sunset. There's humor. Last week, a Belgian mother and daughter wanted a McDonald's meal, but lacked a car for the drive-through only. So they built a cardboard version. Fellow motorists, including police, cheered as they drove through. "It's nice if we have done something to make people laugh," said Mom. "We need that." And there are love notes. Mothers in a Vancouver, British Columbia nursing home got those Sunday from offspring who paraded outside with flowers, balloons, and a bagpiper. On VE Day in Dumfries, Scotland, Edna Wells got a video call from actor Joanna Lumley to ask her about her World War II work in the Women's Royal Naval Service. Ms. Lumley asked her to walk outside. There, Ms. Wells found Captain Chris Smith, with drummer and piper and cheering neighbors, ready to award the medal she had never collected. Her voice wavered as she saluted and said, "Thank you for making this the best day of my life." Now to our five stories, including a look at a Chinese disinformation campaign in Europe, grandmothers taking on Poland's right-wing government, and a grocery worker's account of life in the aisles. Our first story. Disinformation campaigns are a growing concern in the West. While Russia has sometimes been made out as a major source of such activity, evidence suggests that China is actually the more active threat.
The Chinese government has been waging a disinformation campaign within the European Union amid the coronavirus pandemic, and it's not been very convincing. But despite the poor production values and facile messaging, the campaign has spurred European Union officials to warn member states to be on alert. In particular, they say, the campaign could force member states, dependent on Chinese economic ties, to weigh the costs and benefits of calling out Beijing's misbehavior as the financial damage of the coronavirus lockdown compounds. Perhaps no case exemplifies this more than the Chinese embassy in Paris, publishing an article leveling false charges that French nursing home workers had abandoned their posts amid the pandemic, leaving their residents to die of starvation and illness. The article was retweeted by apparent bot accounts. French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian last month summoned China's ambassador to complain about the disinformation effort. But he also emphasized good bilateral relations between France and China overall. Beijing goes through every bilateral channel it can adopt to divide and conquer, says François Goudemont of the Institut Montaigne in Paris, since China's goal of strengthening its economic partnerships is often best accomplished by fighting EU cohesion. This story was reported by Anna Mulrein-Groba in Brussels for The Monitor.
There's an app for that, may sound good to help rein in COVID-19. But what if it also might be used to infer things about people's political leanings or demographic information?
Many countries have toyed with using mobile phones to track the pandemic, despite concerns over privacy, including the United States, United Kingdom, Israel, and Russia. But in India, the world's largest democracy, the stakes are especially high. The country has 1.3 billion people, 23% of whom live below the poverty line, and is eager to allow laborers back to work. But the government's record on digital tools has left many experts skeptical that a tracing app could be deployed without violating civil liberties or building larger surveillance systems that could be exploited down the road. Aroya Setu, or the Bridge to Health tracing app, is voluntary, the government maintains, yet it is already mandatory for public and private sector workers, and officials have proposed requiring it for services like the metro. As knowledge about the novel coronavirus grows, the focus will shift to monitoring people's behavior so the virus doesn't spread, says digital expert Sean McDonald. The problem will then become how to enforce policies in a way that respects human rights, especially for marginalized communities. This is not just a privacy versus public health story anymore, says Mr. McDonald. Instead, we're making the turn into the field of fundamental rights. This story was reported by Lou Del Bello in New Delhi for The Monitor.
Do you have causes you'd take to the streets to defend? These retired women want young Poles to understand, as well as they do, that freedoms are not a given.
The Polish grannies may sound innocuous from their name, but they are a disparate crew of retired professionals, all impassioned, that has been confronting authorities and nationalist demonstrators for more than a year. The group, most of them grandmothers, have handed out leaflets and hoisted placards to protest against a poisonous kind of patriotism that they see afflicting modern Poland. Until the onset of COVID-19, they had been meeting on the streets of Warsaw every week under the protective gaze of two police officers. The women believe that consistency is key to getting their message out. Unlike some other activists, their passion is rooted in the hard history that they've witnessed, notably the toll the German occupation of World War II and later Soviet rule took on their nation. They see worrisome echoes in the fear-mongering rhetoric and policies of the Law and Justice Party, the ruling populist right-wing government that came to power here in 2015 and immediately began introducing controversial judiciary reforms, as well as swelling the ranks of far-right nationalists. I've lived most of my adult life under communism, Christina Pietroska, a great-grandmother, says. In 1989, I started to breathe like a human being. I could travel freely. And now, I feel like someone wants to take this away from me. This story was reported by Dominique Sogel and Monica Rybala in Warsaw for The Monitor.
Perhaps you're not thinking the cereal aisle might present just the right opportunity to display the better angels of your nature. Lee Dean, who wrote this next piece, can help you with that.
As a produce clerk at the grocery store these days, contributor Lee A. Dean noticed conflicted souls armed with shopping lists who were clearly attempting to navigate in uncharted waters. One such man, wearing his mask, brandished a bulbous vegetable, lavender in color with white stripes. "What kind of squash is this?" he asked. "That's an eggplant," Lee replied with all the compassion he could muster. Such is life right now in one Midwestern grocery store. Lee and his colleagues continue to adjust as the elements of what was once considered normal are peeled away like layers of an onion. Hours have been reduced. Sanitary wipes were removed from the entryways in exchange for every cart being wiped down. Bottle returns were eliminated, followed by all returns. Thus far, they have not been asked to enforce social distancing. And Lee doesn't have the heart to break up a conversation between two friends who haven't seen each other in weeks, even if they're in the middle of where he's working. Those little pieces of social cohesion are more important than whether or not he finishes filling the green bean display. This essay was written by Lee Dean in Plainwell, Michigan for The Monitor. You can find his full first-person account in today's issue.
Here are some points of concrete progress from around the world. Take a few inspiring moments to catch a dancing star, seen from Chile, and celebrate new work opportunities for deaf women in Ethiopia. You can find the full Points of Progress list by Nusmila Lohani in today's issue. Now, commentary on Greece from the Monitor's editorial board. During the world's last full-blown crisis, the financial meltdown of a decade ago, Greece was an example of a country not to follow. Its economy had been so mismanaged it needed three international bailouts. Only last year, after experiencing extreme austerity and reform, did it begin to see success. Even more, in March, as the coronavirus pandemic began to strike, its people were well prepared to spring into action. Early on, Greece shuttered much of its society, and citizens diligently followed government officials in honoring the rules of a lockdown. The resiliency that Greeks had built up was put to good use. The country has one of Europe's lowest death rates per capita from COVID-19, a result of new social discipline and better faith in institutions. "We have matured," says Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis. Resiliency is more than bouncing back to the status quo after a disaster. It is the ability to adopt new ideas and practices that strengthen a person or a community. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. And thanks for starting your week with us. Tomorrow, in the next installment of our Navigating Uncertainty series, we'll look at people continuing to push for rights in countries where the Arab Spring feels like a distant memory. Also, we're working on a project highlighting personal stories for Memorial Day. Tell us about your loved ones by filling out our form or emailing us at engage@csps.com. You can find the link in today's issue. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective column shares how certain universal spiritual ideas have helped one woman find peace amid the coronavirus pandemic. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Samantha Lane Perfas and Jeff Turton.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor, copyright 2020.